life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, at least for now. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And Barry, it's good to be back with you recording a Saturday show. You know, we haven't done one of these in a while, and it's been because of a whole pileup of stuff, scheduling and hardware glitches and all kinds of bad stuff that have basically made us run some reruns on Saturday.
Well, we'll know if we start getting like feedback from our listeners of bring back the reruns if they really don't want to hear us live
anymore. Well, live on tape, as they used
to say.
I always used to laugh about that when I was a kid. Remember on TV, this program was recorded live on tape. Okay, what does that mean?
We figured it out.
Yeah.
No, but it's good, and we're glad to be here with you. We're actually recording this on Thursday night prior to Saturday. Chuck, there is so much that's happening around our country right now. So many things that we could talk about. I mean, I was at my local bank today, and one of the tellers said, I know you kind of are interested in these kind of things. Have you seen a video on this Sandy Hook conspiracy? Now, we're not talking about that today.
No.
But the whole point is that people are talking about all of the various things that are going on around the country and all the various memes that are being pushed out there right now in relation to our national public policy, specifically right now on gun control. And maybe to, I won't say a lesser extent because I don't want to like make people think that I'm saying it's a lower tier, but maybe to a separate extent and not so much vitriol around it on the life issue, because obviously this week is the 40th anniversary of the establishment of injustice across our land with the implementation of the Roe versus Wade decision, which if you're a constitutionalist and you've ever taken one of our Institute on the Constitution classes, you know full well only applies to Roe and Wade. It doesn't apply as the law of the land.
That's right. Now, since you brought that up real quick, let's segue for a minute. Do, 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 do. Okay, Barry and I are going to be teaching new classes on Institute on the Constitution.
Yes, we are.
He and I are going to be team teaching in Mount Vernon, Ohio. It's an outreach of the Knox Community Presbyterian Church. And it's going to be held at Mount Vernon Nazarene University starting March 1st. March 1st. Which is a Friday.
And it's going to be from, I think, 3:30 until 5 p.m.
3:30 till 5. Now, the same night.
On Fridays, starting March 1st.
The same night, we're also going to be teaching a class at Marengo, Ohio, at Marengo Christian Church. And that we have that one scheduled for the full 2 hours. Normally,
from
Barry and I
until 9,
don't
yes.
like to cut it to the hour and a half. It's really very difficult to get the class in. And people say, 2 hours of class? Let me tell you. Many weeks we have to fight our way out of the classroom because people won't stop asking us questions.
Well, Chuck, actually, my last two classes that I've taught in Southern Ohio, we've started at 2 hours and usually go 2.5 to 2:45.
This has been our experience as we teach this class because there's so much material that people are absolutely begging for, but can't find any place. And now you know the place where you can find it. Now, if Marengo's too far for you, or maybe Mount Vernon, Ohio's too far for you, we're looking at forming new classes in the Central Ohio area. And I know Barry's talking about forming one in the Southeast Ohio area.
Which we should have an announcement on within the next week.
We're looking at making some negotiations in Licking County, Newark area, and also maybe in the Hilliard area. We've had inquiries about that. So if you're interested in that, please let us know. Contact us. Our numbers and our email addresses are all over the place. You can't miss us.
But the best place that they can go to is at our website,
which is
www.principledpolicy.com. That's principled with a D, policy.com, or you can link from the WLRY webpage. They have a hot link right to our website. So if you listen to this program and you like WLRY, you can always go to their homepage and come to us, too.
And you can also friend Barry and I on Facebook.
Absolutely.
Just go to Facebook, look up Chuck Michaels in Westerville, Ohio, and Barry Sheets in Gallipolis, Ohio, and there we are. And frankly, I almost never turn down a friend request unless it's obviously someone who's selling pictures of themselves in bathing suits or something. I turn away. We don't friend those people. But everybody else, pretty much, you almost have to openly insult me to get me to unfriend you. So I almost never unfriend anybody. I do get unfriended myself occasionally. So, but that being said, please come on out, visit us, take one of our classes. Now, let's go back to it.
Okay. Well, and we're going to talk more about the pro-life portion of this in the second portion of our program. But right now, a lot of hoopla is being made over the fact that, since I said we were recording this on Thursday, today Senator Dianne Feinstein introduced her legislation to ban certain types of quote-unquote assault rifle. But you know what, Chuck? We're going to save that for a little bit because we've got some other things that are going on out there that we really need to talk about first. And the first up on the agenda, ladies and gentlemen, I am not kidding you, okay? This is not a joke. And we're as serious as we can get out, and we'll have a link on our website to it if you really want to go out and read it yourself. But a state legislator from the state of Missouri, the lady and the legislator whose name is Maria Chappelle Nadal, is a state representative from the St. Louis County area, which if you know anything about St. Louis area in Missouri, there's West County and then there's the rest of St. Louis County. She represents the rest of St. Louis County. The West County area is more suburban and upscale, I would assume, and has some suburban areas in it, whereas the rest of it actually includes the actual city of St. Louis. But State Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal has introduced Missouri Senate Bill 124. Now, we're talking about gun issues here. So this one is a novel approach, Chuck. I mean, there are many ways of getting at trying to create a national registry, and there's many ways of getting at trying to ban guns if you're a liberal. This one, I got to give her kudos for being creative at least. You see, because Senator Chappelle Nadal's bill actually says that if you are a parent of a child in one of the schools, you must, I'm not saying may, you must, it's a requirement, give notification to the school if you own a firearm. Yeah, you heard me right, ladies and gentlemen. If you're a parent of a child going to any school in Missouri, any public school in Missouri, you must, under this bill, if it becomes law, notify the school that your child goes to that you are a gun owner.
And, oh, by the way, that goes for private or charter schools as well. So
well,
it's not just public.
Good luck on trying to get that through. But anyhow, but Senator Chappelle Nadal, well, I love saying that name, Chappelle Nadal. I like that.
say it ten times fast.
It's a smooth name, but yeah, if I say it 10 times fast, it's going to get rough. She's quoted specifically as saying, I'm not trying to take away the gun rights of any parent or any other citizens. I believe in the Second Amendment. Now, we've got an audio. Now, if you don't believe me, we've got an audio here of her actually saying this and, of course, some interviews with some of the parents in a local school district here. Now, Chuck, you and I want to take some time here because we did this off air. We want our listeners to hear this, and then we're going to break down and tell you where there are problems with this whole concept.
Exactly. Here we go.
Ever since the horrific school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, gun control has been a hot topic. Now comes word of a Missouri lawmaker who wants any parent who owns a gun to notify their child's school. News Channel 5's Elizabeth Matthews talked to the lawmaker about the proposal, as well as parents tonight. Elizabeth?
Michael Lawmaker says she hopes the already filed bill will bring awareness to schools and to parents about keeping their guns locked up. It's the next idea in a long list of proposed ideas for gun control, making it mandatory for parents to notify their children's schools about their gun supply.
I am not trying to take away the gun rights of any parents or any other citizen. I believe in the Second Amendment.
State Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal says she wants the violence in schools to stop, and this is just one different idea that no one's brought up.
Encourages parents to make sure they store their guns safely in their homes. It also gives the school districts the opportunity to help encourage gun safety in the community and in the household.
We headed to a high school basketball game to see just how parents would feel if they had to inform their school if they are gun owners.
I agree with it. We need to know because a lot of parents aren't governing their homes properly.
Most parents say the bill doesn't focus the attention on the right parents.
It concerns me a bit because I think the parents that would have no problem registering their guns aren't the ones you have to worry about.
The principal of Brentwood High says the information may help the police more than the school district. And what about blaming a parent for guns in their house that they don't even know about?
Maybe a student obtaining a weapon without the parent even knowing about it.
I understand what they're trying to do, but making us notify them if we have guns is not going to deter the behavior what makes people do what they do with guns.
Now, this proposal is only one of a handful in Missouri's House and Senate. News Channel 5's political analyst Dave Robertson told me he's surprised that there aren't more bills being proposed about gun control, but any chances of any bills about the issue being passed slim to none because of the political atmosphere between the lawmakers and the governor. Mike?
Elizabeth, thanks.
Well, and a hat tip to Missouri Channel 5 for providing us with that video and that audio, which you can get on our website. Maybe we'll have that posted up. Chuck, I mean, where do we begin? I mean, this one is just so ripe for the picking.
Yeah, I jotted down several things. First of all, there's a presupposition.
Yes, there is.
And the base presupposition that is that a gun is not used for protection.
Yes, I caught that.
Okay, because it has to be locked up.
Well, of course.
Now,
of course.
A locked up gun is about as useful as maybe a hammer.
No, actually, a hammer is more useful.
Yeah, it might be.
And you actually know that more people are killed with hammers every year than there are with guns.
Than there are with guns, yeah.
We do have data on that.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. It depends on how you look at the statistic, but yes. But that being said, this bill, if you look at the representatives, if you heard that part of our interview, mm-hmm. It's about awareness.
No, it's not. Who's kidding whom here? This isn't about – the only awareness it is we're going to put you on a list to say you guys have got guns in your home, and then we're going to – because the schools are going to be good citizens, they're going to turn that list over to the police department, who are then going to probably harass the parents. Anytime a gun crime would happen anywhere in the neighborhood, every parent would end
That's
up getting
right.
interrogated by the police.
You'd instantly have a policeman at your door saying, you're registered as one of the gun owners in this neighborhood.
Where are your guns?
Where are your guns?
That's right.
Here is what's going on there. There is a gotta be, we don't know this for sure because we haven't seen it, but there's a set of talking points floating around. And this is how it's being sold. We're raising awareness. We're not against the Second Amendment.
She said it. I believe in the Second Amendment. She may believe in the fact that we have a Second Amendment,
yes.
But I don't think she believes the words as they were written by our founders and what they mean.
I would guess that Representative Chappelle Nadal has no clue. I would bet if we got her in our Institute on the Constitution class and made her take one of the questions on the Second Amendment, A, she has no clue what it says. B, she thinks it's about deer hunting. C, it doesn't really matter because the meme that's emerging right now in the talking about that is that we just have to do something. The rules need to go out the window. We are no longer a society of law. We are becoming a society of what the law is, whatever the people say it is. Now, if you can gin up enough support by this kind of rhetoric, then you can toss the rules out the window.
Oh, sure. Now, I think it's interesting that it was noted that she says that this is a different idea that no one has brought up. Well, Senator Chappelle Nadal, I think there's probably a reason for that.
Yes.
Because I think everybody else took a look at it and said, this is the most cockamamie idea I've ever heard of. This is never going to pass. And all you're going to do is incense a large segment of your population who, as the one commentator said in there, these are not the people you have to worry about. The people who would voluntarily register their guns are not the ones you got to worry about.
Yeah, exactly.
But the point is, I take that with a grain of salt because
yes.
I wouldn't register my guns, but you know what? I'm not the type of person you need to worry about either.
Exactly.
But the key is, this is similar to what happens with public health issues, Chuck.
Yes.
If the public health councils, whether it's the CDC or state level Department of Health or whatever, if they want to address an emerging health issue, usually they do it with vaccination. Well, I talked to my doctor one time, and he goes, well, really, honestly, with some of these vaccines, the demographic that they are trying to reach to protect with this are not the ones who come voluntarily to get vaccines. That's why you have to make it mandatory.
That's right. And that's exactly it.
And it stopped me for a second, and I thought, you know what? You're absolutely right. And that's the reason why she's making this mandatory. The people they're trying to get are not the ones who are going to voluntarily give up the fact that they are gun owners. And that would be those who understand the Constitution, Charles.
Yeah, and this is the problem. Now, the way Representative Chappelle Nadal put it, if you take it out to this statement out to its logical absurdity, this is just an idea that nobody else came up with. In other words, she dropped the bill to make a suggestion.
Well, Chuck, some people just don't understand anything about our government structure. And I'm not sure if she's one of them or not, because maybe she just doesn't understand when you drop legislation, once it passes, it has the force of the law. It quits becoming a suggestion and it becomes a mandate.
I have a feeling that she really, basically what she's doing is jumping on the president's bandwagon.
Oh, with both feet and waving banners.
Yeah. This is going to be something she's hoping to gin up a lot of, backpats and kudos and all these things for this wonderful idea, when in fact it's really just a cockamamie scheme. This really wouldn't work under any circumstances. If you think about it, what would happen would you drop the law, you'd make it mandatory to tell the school officials that you have these guns, and then nobody would comply. I mean, that's what's going to happen. There will be a handful.
You'll have a handful of people who will
comply. These are people who would obey a law no matter what it was. It's the law, so I have to obey. Well, there are laws that are legal and there are laws that are illegal, and this is one of the illegal laws. But she's hoping that this is going to advance her political career. And in fact, I think what she's basically done is she's taken a shovel and begun to dig a little oblong hole that'll get about 6 feet deep
where her political career will be.
Yeah, where her political career will be at some point. Now, I won't say that she won't get inner city support, but she ain't going any further.
No, not in Missouri. No. Understanding kind of the Missouri history and background, this isn't going to go very far. But it does, Chuck. One of the things it does is it gives a greater emphasis on the word loco in the in loco parentis of the schools.
Again, this is one of those kind of ideas. It shows we're making fun of this bill because it's not going to go anyplace.
Well, we don't think it's going to go anyplace. Let's put it that way, because we're using common sense.
Yes.
However, common sense is one of those commodities that is in scarcity these days, sort of like ammunition and gold and silver.
Well, exactly. This is one of those kind of bills that looks like it's going nowhere and somebody starts hanging amendments on it like a Christmas tree, and suddenly it becomes a juggernaut. So you have to be careful about making predictions about where bills are going to go. Very often, they don't look anything like they started out at the end, as Barry and I, especially Barry, has been made aware of. When people start amending bills, one never knows what will happen. But this is very illustrative of the type of thinking that the people we are sending to be our representatives are engaging in. In other words, it's about a mile wide and about an inch deep.
Indeed. But Chuck, you know, one of the upsides on it, and our friends over at American Vision, where we got this original article from, said that there could be one more incentive to homeschool.
Oh, absolutely. Think about this, guys. There's nothing in here, nothing in this bill, even though it explicitly states public, private, or charter school. If you homeschool, You don't have to notify anybody.
Now, I don't know exactly what Missouri's laws on homeschooling are, so it could end up being a trigger on them as well. But either way, just be careful, because if this idea that, as she said, is different and no one's brought up yet, happens to catch on in various other states, well, Chuck, we want to keep an eye on it, because I could see a couple of our Ohio elected officials jumping all over something like this, because, honestly, it's attractive, and it's a way for them to be a gun banner without banning guns.
Exactly, because that's exactly what this is. This is a backdoor gun ban, because what they're trying to do, basically, is make it so difficult to own a gun. And we're going to move along into that, because this absolutely goes right with it. But make it so difficult to own a gun that nobody will want to do it.
Well, and I think you're right, but I think that's an idea that Senator Chappelle Nadal actually did get from somebody else who had that idea on a much grander scale.
Yes.
And ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about the fact that Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, along with a handful of Senate Democrats, today on Thursday as we record this, dropped her legislation to ban the sale and manufacture of over 150 types of semi-automatic weapons. Yes, you heard me right. Her bill would ban 150 different types of semi-automatic weapons. Now, Chuck, it actually bans more than that, and we're going to get into the details of that here in a minute. But a couple of the other things it does is it will not allow you to have a semi-automatic weapon holding more than 10 rounds of ammunition, and it would bar you from selling those high-capacity clips. So this really, supposedly, as Senator Feinstein has said, and this is a quote taken from The Hill, which is one of the official blogs of the Washington, D.C. political scene, thehill.com, Senator Feinstein was quoted as saying, and I quote, "No weapon is taken from anyone." Well, that sounds like Chappelle Nadal's claim that we're not banning any guns.
It's exactly that. Now, think about this. You're allowed to own high-capacity magazines, mm-hmm. and you're allowed to buy them, but you're not allowed to sell them. Well, how do you buy one if no one is selling?
Well, it's like an old thing where you find a stump and you leave some money on it. You walk away, yeah. You come back, and voila, the money's gone, and there's a cliff.
I'm going to remind everybody that there used to be this thing in the 1920s called Prohibition.
Yes.
And as we all know in Prohibition, when alcohol became illegal for consumption, except in medicinal purposes, remember how many people suddenly had medical conditions where they had to get a prescription for a bottle of gin, a whole bunch of them. But that being said, what happened? You created a black market.
Yes, you did.
And you know what? People wanted to own those things. And there were people willing to sell them illegally because the law was unjust. And therefore, you created a black market. And that's exactly what you're going to do here. Now, if you want to see how that works out, look at Mexico. What did the Mexicans do? They get, apparently, Eric Holder to sell them weapons through Fast and Furious. Now, it's very interesting to me that here we have a Democratic cabal, and not just Democrats, but also Republicans, but not all Democrats, and we'll talk about that a little later. But the fact is that there's a Democratic cabal that wants to get together and ban the same kinds of guns that they sold to Mexicans, to Mexican drug cartels, which were then later used to kill American border agents and drug control agents. Well, gee, what a shock. It's okay to sell them to Mexico where they're absolutely illegal. You cannot own a gun in Mexico. In fact, sometimes if you take a gun to Mexico to go hunting, you end up in jail even though you have all the proper paperwork filled out. Because the Mexicans, a tyrannical government, essentially a totalitarian government, they want to keep people from being able to overthrow the government. Therefore, they ban the private ownership of weapons. The only people who can have guns are the federales and the army. Okay, so what happens? The people get beat up and shot and abused by the federales and the army because they're unarmed. So some of those people hook up with revolutionary groups that don't feel too bad about buying smuggled weapons. And we make a big deal about we're going to drop guns from American dealers into Mexico. Well, the fact is, Barry, first of all, I don't know why you'd buy an AK from an American dealer when you would pay probably right now about $1,200 for one, when you can buy one on the black market for about $400.
Now, not that we know anywhere where you can get one like that.
But no, but you can also buy one on the black market for $400 fully auto, because they get smuggled in by revolutionary groups all the time.
You mean sort of like the Fast and Furious guns that got sent to Mexico and then found their way back across the border?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that type of work. Okay.
So the fact is that this is all drivel. This is a backdoor gun ban.
I want to go into it a little bit deeper here, Chuck, because I can hear somebody poo-pooing us now. Well, you're saying it's a backdoor gun ban. No, no, no. They're just trying to take away these dangerous weapons off the streets. And there are 2,200 models that are protected from it. Well, not so fast, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, Feinstein admits the purpose of her bill is to dry up the supply of weapons over time. Okay, so She's trying to get rid of the supply. Well, wasn't that what they were doing with Prohibition? They were trying to dry up the supply of booze. What happened? It went up, and it was controlled by certain factions, and they sold it at a premium. Well, that's probably what's going to end up happening here. But what she's now doing is with this bill, unlike the 1994 similar assault weapons ban, which she was instrumental in before, this one doesn't have a sunset provision. So in other words, it would be a permanent ban, unlike the 94, which actually had a sunset, which meant that after a certain amount of time, it no longer had
10 years.
Effect. 10 years, if they wanted to re-up it, they could, but they chose not to. The Congress chose not to re-up it.
Let's stop. Hold your thought, if you would.
Right here in my hand. Got it.
And remember, this ban was dead in 1994 in the United States Senate.
Yes, it was.
Who revived it?
Okay, pop quiz time. I'm going to fail. I don't remember.
Bob Dole.
Bob Dole. That's okay. Yes, yes, yes. You're right.
Bob Dole, this bill was dead. And I mean doornail dead. And Bob Dole basically put the pressure on for Republicans to come to the table. We'll put a sunset provision in it. That's how they got it passed.
That's how they got the votes to pass it.
They're going to have to do it again. Except I don't think you're going to get Republicans if they value their positions.
Well, right now, no Republican senator is a co-sponsor on the bill. Now, Chuck, the reason why I want to go back to this, I'm bringing my thought back out of my hand and sticking it back in my head. The reason why I believe that you're right, that this is a backdoor, larger ban than what they're claiming, they keep talking about having a military feature. Well, Chuck, I'd like to see the definition in the bill of what they mean by military feature, because if that means I put a laser sight on it, or if I attach a flashlight clip to the bottom of it, or something of that nature to make it military style, well, that's ridiculous, first of all, because those things are not part of the gun themselves.
Right.
But here's the one that is part of the vast majority of firearms in our country. And I'll read it to you from this provision. That the bill bans the sale, transfer, manufacture, and import of all semi-automatic rifles and pistols that can accept detachable magazines. Okay, now, Charles, you and I sat here and thought about this off air.
Yes, we did.
If it's a semi-automatic pistol, and that's a Glock, SIG, Smith & Wesson, Taurus, you name it, you name the model. 9mm, 44, 45, 40, 380, 32, 350, you name it. Every last one of them has a detachable magazine.
I can think of one. One.
Okay, which one?
Okay. Hasn't been made in over 70 years.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah. It's a Webley Fosbury. It's a semi-automatic revolver.
Okay, well, fine. We'll figure out a way to get at that, too. Because
good luck. Yeah. Good luck finding one. They cost about $1,500 if you can find one.
Now, wait a minute. If you break down and you can take the cylinder out.
You can, but it's a...
That's detachable then, Charles. I'm sorry. It falls under the...
I suppose you
could. But ladies and gentlemen, you think about this carefully. Pretty much every handgun that's not a revolver or a Derringer has a detachable magazine.
Mm-hmm. We're thinking in terms of the way regulators will look at it.
Numerous hunting rifles have detachable. I own a Savage 17, mm-hmm. and I'm willing to say so on air. Savage Model 17 rifle has a five-shot clip. Now, it's got a bolt action, which supposedly, if it's operated. Now, get this, Chuck. This is where they're saying, oh, well, if it's manually operated by bolt, lever, or slide action, it's exempt. If it's a gun manually operated by bolt, well, you know what? Does that mean that if I've got my pistol, my semi-automatic pistol, which has its detachable clip, if I can jack the slide back with my hand, does it make it exempt? I doubt very seriously under Feinstein's rules that's going to... But it's a great talking point for them to try to defray all of the opposition that is going to be coming from gun rights groups.
Okay, here's what happens. When laws get passed, rules get written by agencies.
By agencies, that's right.
When the agency takes a look at that provision, guaranteed that will be part of the rule.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know what? You will make the sales pitch up front now that, oh, no, we don't mean to ban those type of sidearms. Oh, because they don't have a military-style feature. Well, folks, what is a military-style feature? Does that mean that if it has iron sights, it's not military-style? I know a number of military-style guns with iron sights.
I got news. I've got my AR-15 has iron sights.
Yes, yeah, there you go. So then I guess iron sights could be considered a military-style feature.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. How many handguns don't have laser sighting on them?
Well, look, it's obvious that what is meant to happen, that we're supposed to relax. All they want to do is ban semi-autos. Well, first of all, I love the question that's going around. Why do you need a semi-automatic rifle? And I said, because the government has them. We shouldn't pull any punches. The fact is, the Second Amendment is not about hunting. It's about protection against tyranny. Now, in former days, that meant that we protected ourselves against invasion. And in fact, rifles in the hands of private citizens are the best deterrent against invasion that you can imagine. That's exactly why the Swiss, in Switzerland, you are required to own a gun, a semi-automatic or actually, I believe an automatic. You are required to own an automatic weapon. And you're required to show up, I think, for 2 weeks every 2 years for bivouac, where you do military-style training. And the fact is, they're ready because of have been in very dangerous situation in the past in Switzerland, surrounded by Germany, France, Italy. You look at who they're surrounded by, no wonder. And in fact, it was once threatened that the Germans would send 1 million troops over the Swiss border. And someone in Switzerland, high up in the government, I think it was the president, basically said, well, then I guess every Swiss will have to kill 2 Germans.
Yes.
And that is exactly the point of owning these weapons. We are protecting ourselves, our families, our homes, our cities, our counties, our states, and our nation from these things. The fact is, we need these things in order to be prepared to do that.
Okay, well, you know, and let's help our listeners here a little bit, Chuck. A good friend of mine, I think you might know him as well, Ron Cooper at the ARC Foundation down in Dayton. He's actually one of the instructors for Institute on the Constitution over in the southwestern part of the state. Ron took some time, and he did a little exercise, in which I'm going to send over to Chuck, and we can put up on our website with attribution to Ron, where he took the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution, which, as we know, says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's the Second Amendment. How much misinterpretation has that gone under? Well, as we teach at Institute on the Constitution, you are to look at what the founders wrote in light of what the founders' definition of words are.
Right.
And the best place to find the founders' definitions of words is from one of the founders himself, Noah Webster, who wrote the first American dictionary, the Noah Webster 1828 Dictionary of the American Language. Now, Ron, our friend, took the Second Amendment's language as it is laid out in the Second Amendment and used the 1828 dictionary to define all the words. And this is how it would read with all the words defined out as Noah Webster said the definitions of those words meant. Second Amendment. An adequately ordered force of free people, citizens, constantly ready for protecting, defending, and maintaining their geography in national, but especially in state, local, and home emergencies. This requires the people, that is, it is indispensable, necessary, and essential for the people, to have the just liberty of carrying, wearing, holding, and training with weapons of offense, or armor for defense and protection of the body for attack or defense in war or hostility in open or concealed manners. Such arms are maintained by the people to keep off or hinder approach or attack of an enemy or an evil. These rights can be improved by the state, but not violated either positively by contravention or by non-fulfillment or neglect of performance or by process to destroy or hinder, as to infringe efficacy. Arms are the entire system required, as guns, ammunition, sights, knives, magazines, etc. are included. The arms are the same as used by the regular military for protecting the state, community, and or home. The government cannot restrict or tax or impede or hinder the distribution or storage or use or procurement of arms by the people. That's the Second Amendment in its expanded form, using the definitions of the words in our existing Second Amendment as defined by our founders. Noah Webster took what the definitions were in common use in the, this was the 1828 dictionary. He was a founder. When they wrote this document and the Second Amendment, this is what those words meant to them.
And this is the principal approach.
Yes, it is.
That we use when we teach Institute on the Constitution. We teach you what the words mean. You need to know what the words mean to understand what the amendment says. It has nothing to do with duck hunting. It has
That's right.
It has nothing to do with restricting magazine size, caliber, firing rate. If you can think of something that is being proposed to ban your weapon on, or ban weapons period on, this is exactly what wasn't meant by the Second Amendment, because it's very clear. The federal government may not interfere with the right to keep and bear arms. The states can. We've talked about this before. The states can do these things. They're permitted by the Constitution, unless you look at the incorporation doctrine of the 14th Amendment. Then, suddenly, if you want to do that, and since that's the current meme, that's what you have to do, the states also are not permitted to ban the private ownership of weapons or restrict in any way.
I don't think they like that when you turn it around on them like
that. Of course they don't. Barry, but that is the hallmark of liberalism. When you turn it the meme back around on them, for instance, when we talked about Toure and the fact that he called us constitutional absolutists, and we asked the question, oh, well, does that mean the 13th Amendment can be ignored? The answer, of course, is no.
No, of course not.
How about the 14th in this case? Well, no.
No.
In fact, that's exactly the opposite of what he was saying. So that's the entire point. What Feinstein is trying to do here is do the same thing that Chappelle Nadal was doing. Lay something out, see who salutes, see how much you can get of this thing, because what she's asking for the moon, and she'll take a small asteroid.
Now the thing is, you're also going to use what I call crowd intimidation techniques. And that is, when she did her press conference with some of her fellow senators, she had some groups around her, including the U.S. Conference of Mayors, the Major Cities Chiefs Association. You notice it wasn't the Chiefs of Police Association.
That's right.
Because most local community chiefs of police are not in favor of all this garbage, and neither are their rank and file. But it's the Major Cities Chiefs of Police Association, the Police Foundation. Now, Charles, you and I did a little homework
yes,
here.
Yes, we did.
And we dug out that the Police Foundation is not who you think they would be if you just heard that name. You'd think, oh, all the police have put together a foundation. Au contraire, mon frere.
That's right.
What we have here, and now Chuck, some of the heavy hitters in the Police Foundation, i.e. their board of directors, reads like a who's list of the radical left and the radical gun grab movement, all funded by our old buddies, the Ford Foundation, who are procurers of everything liberal that they can possibly get. Ladies and gentlemen, know who you're fighting. So when you get from your congressperson or your U.S. senator like Sherrod Brown, well, the Police Foundation endorses this responsible measure, you can come back to them and say, oh, you mean the former president of the Brady campaign for gun control? You mean the former mayors of Indianapolis who tried to do a full gun ban in the city who ended up getting run out on a rail because of it? I mean, who else is involved in this? I mean, we looked at the whole list.
Barry, this is a who's who of gun grabbers.
It is.
It's also a progressive who's who.
Indeed.
The Police Foundation is ultra progressive. They talk openly about being involved in quote unquote social experimentation. Now, their original funding comes from the ultra progressive Ford Foundation.
That's right.
And you've heard us talk on this program about the Constitution, and one of the constitutions that is waiting in the wings is one that we've talked about. It's called the New States Constitution, And it was written by a man named Rexford Tugwell, for the most part, although he didn't work by himself. It's mainly his ideas. But the fact is, his funding also came from the ultra-progressive Ford Foundation. And in fact, if you look this thing, it fits in very well with some of the ideas being put forth. This social experimentation that the Police Foundation is engaged in with these ultra-progressive board members who are guiding it, they fit together like a lock and key. And I think that's a very appropriate way of looking at it, because the fact is, they're going to close the lock with the key, but you're not going to get it back open, because this is about taking your guns away. It's about empowering local police to act as what amounts to a federal constabulary. And that is exactly what the Police Foundation wants to do. They like the idea of consolidation of power. They want to use quote-unquote scientific methodology in modern policing. And if you look at some of the initiatives they're talking about, a lot of it has to do with surveillance. A lot of it has to do with basically the power that they want to wield as local law enforcement. It's very dangerous. You have to read between the lines.
That's the reason why we took a look at their board of directors.
Yes.
That's where the organization's going. Now, this board of directors is made up, as we said, of very hardcore progressives, legal scholars in the leftist progressive mode, a criminal psychologist and behavioral psychologist, including Walter Menninger of the Menninger Foundation in Topeka, Kansas, which is one of the biggest pop psychiatry units out there, Paul Helmke, who was the former president of the Brady campaign, David Baker Lewis, who was a former clerk to Judge Levin in
the Michigan Federal Circuit Court.
And William Hudnut, who Chuck knows William fondly Hudnut, and historically.
I lived in Indianapolis in 79, 80, and 81, and William Hudnut was the mayor, the very progressive Republican mayor. So don't kid yourself that there aren't progressive Republicans. William Hudnut was one of them, and he couldn't get elected. He wanted to run for some higher office, and he basically couldn't get there because he was an ultra-progressive. There are a lot of these people. We looked up some of the past members of the board. Frieda Adler, who is a social psychologist.
William Webster, former head of the FBI. Henry Cisneros,
who was a former mayor of San Antonio and also a former head of the HUD, Housing and Urban Development, who was big on grabbing guns in federal housing projects. In fact, Henry Cisneros made it illegal to own a gun to protect yourself from the armed and dangerous gang members and drug dealers in the federal housing projects. So, who obeyed those laws? The folks who basically depended upon the federal housing projects for a roof over their head, and who preyed on them? The guys who didn't care about the gun ban, who regularly robbed them and raped them and killed them.
You see, ladies and gentlemen, you have to look beyond the headlines, dig in deeper, and see where these things are coming from. Now, again, the Police Foundation was one of the groups that stood up there with Dianne Feinstein to try to give it an air of legitimacy that law enforcement believes this is responsible legislation to help protect us from tragic crime. Well, no, these are organizations and groups that want to do experiments on groups in society, giving the police overweening powers,
yeah,
while taking away this private citizen's right to protect themselves. You don't have, as one of your board of directors, the head of the Brady campaign if what you're really about is not banning guns.
That's right. Where are the pro-gun people? Where's Larry Pratt? Where is Wayne LaPierre?
Where is people like Sheriff Richard Mack,
yes,
or others who are actual current law enforcement who could weigh in on, well, yes, let's learn how to, through innovation and science, how to do better policing. But let's do it more non-invasively.
Well, this is more of that nonsense that we're having a conversation. We're going to have a conversation about gun control. And in fact, there's an interesting little piece that I saw the other day, and I meant to send it to you, and I didn't get it done, and I lost it since. But basically, it's people were invited that were pro-Second Amendment to a meeting where there was going to be a discussion about gun rights, and basically it was no discussion at all. They were invited in, there were PowerPoint presentations made, and every time someone would object, they were shushed and threatened with being removed from the meeting. So it wasn't a discussion at all. It was dictation. So eventually, basically, a group of them got together and sort of stormed the front with questions. And suddenly the tent was folded up. The presenters took their equipment, their PowerPoint presentations, and left. Because once it became clear that there was no conversation going to be had, the participants in the audience who had been invited said, no, thank you very much. We want to get some of our facts out there as well. Well, you can't do that. This is the kind of people, this group is the kind of group that runs discussions that way. They're facilitated meetings in which anyone who has a different opinion is shushed, ostracized, basically put off in a corner, and attempts are made to create a group dynamic that these people are somehow troublemakers. Well, are they troublemakers? You bet they are in public meetings. And in fact, I've been one of those troublemakers in a public meeting. And we've even attempted to teach people how to be a troublemaker in a public meeting using some of Beverly Eakman's material, you know, basically how to disrupt a facilitated meeting.
Yes.
And that is actually excellent stuff.
It is. Now, Chuck, I did a little bit more digging while we were here about Police Foundation and what their position is on gun violence. They are advocating for, and it's interesting because Dianne Feinstein skirted around this issue in her press conference. She kind of hit it from the side and kind of glanced off and kept going. They actually are advocating background checks for all firearms purchases, including transactions by private sellers at gun shows and over the internet. So in other words, before you could sell a private transaction between individuals, which right now is not required.
That's right.
For federal paperwork.
That's the so-called gun show loophole.
The gun show loophole. They want to close the gun show loophole. That's what she's up to.
Yeah.
This is part of what Dianne Feinstein is promoting here. And if the case is read, Chuck, there will be no need to go to gun shows because there would probably be not more than a small handful of revolvers that would qualify as being still able to be bought or sold.
Yeah, it would bring an end to gun shows. Essentially, there would still be private transactions, but they'd all be under the table. I'm assuming that somebody's going to bring up a companion piece to try what Canada attempted, which was a colossal flopperoo, and that is to all gun owners would have to be registered, and they would have to register what type of weapons that they had, and Canada has had massive non-compliance. Essentially, they've spent, as I expected with Obamacare, it's cost way more than was originally budgeted with virtually, I think they've had something like 30% compliance, which means 70% of the gun owners in Canada said, we're not doing it. Because they know what it meant. It means eventual gun confiscation. The only purpose to register is to be able to go.
To know where to go to round them up.
To know where to go to round them up. That's the only reason. You and I had an article in here, and we didn't use it, that talked about essentially making the big case. You know, people talked about Hitler had gun registration, and he used it. Well, it turns out that it wasn't Hitler that registered guns. It was the Weimar Republic. All Hitler did was, when he came into office, was use the list that the Weimar Republic had already made. So you guys that keep talking about Hitler using these lists to grab guns, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay, we'll concede. Hitler had the list already because he didn't change that part of the law. If you bought a gun, you had to register it.
That's right.
And he used it to pick them up. And the people he used them to pick them up from? Jews, Slovaks, people who weren't Aryans. And even the Aryans lost their guns. Catholics, people who were members of Protestant denominations who refused to buckle under and take the cross off the front of their altars and put on a swastika. Suddenly, those people found their weapons being confiscated. Well, guess what, folks?
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. And what was used? The registration documents that were required by the Weimar Republic. So there you go. We'll concede. It wasn't just Hitler. It was the Weimar Republic. And the reason the Weimar Republic passed that law was because it was a very unpopular government. And the reason it was unpopular was because they're who surrendered during the war. They're who capitulated to the Allies. We don't want to get into too far into that, but that's the reason. So we have history on our side, Barry, or against us, if you will.
Yeah, possibly.
Stalin, did the same thing. And of course, he didn't do it by himself. Lenin did it. And if you recall, one of the reasons that guns weren't allowed in Russia from before the time that the Soviets took over was the fact that they kept assassinating czars and ministers. Although in Russia, one of the things they liked to do was make up bombs. But there were a lot of people shot with pistols and that kind of thing. And generally, they were imported from Poland and Germany and those places. And the government banned them. And Lenin, understanding that he was actually a member of a minority faction who had seized control of power, did the same thing. He wanted to make sure that nobody was going to overthrow him the way he overthrew the Tsar, or overthrew the provisional government the way they overthrew the Tsar.
Well, you know what the old saying is, those who do not learn from history are destined to repeat it.
So here we go. Here we go again. Feinstein has forgotten that when her little bill was passed the first time, what happened to the crime rate and the gun death rate?
Well, supposedly, according to research ginned up by this Police Research Foundation, which happens to be associated with the Police Foundation, which happens to be associated with the Brady campaign, it all went down, Chuck.
Hooey. It went way up.
Of course it did.
And in fact, if you look at the curves, the fact is the number of murders has steadily dropped since the semi-automatic ban expired.
Yeah, well, that's inconvenient truth, Chuck. See, Al Gore's not the only one who can coin that phrase.
Well, that's right.
That's an inconvenient truth, Chuck.
In fact, there was kind of a joke on Facebook that I kind of laughed about, and that was that somebody had posted the number of gun deaths and the number of people who used Internet Explorer on the same graph, and they match exactly as it falls and falls and falls and falls. So somebody said, so the obvious conclusion is, if everybody stops using Internet Explorer, there won't be any more gun deaths.
You know, they may be onto something there.
And again, folks, this is why you have to be very careful about relationships on graphs and true correlation, because there's no correlation between the use
That's right.
of Internet Explorer and gun deaths.
Which is the reason why ladies and gentlemen, if you can find it, go out and Google it up or whatever, or go to a local bookstore and ask for it. There's an old book out there called How to Lie with Statistics.
Yes.
It's a fascinating read. I would suggest it for everybody because it really does unlock many of these things so that when you start reading these articles and seeing this data that's being thrown at you, you can stop and say, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Now, are you using the mean, the median, the average, or a statistical compilation?
Yeah. You can see it in a lot of places, a lot of statistical fallacies. You know, we talked about it early in this week. There was a statistical fallacy of a form, and that is that thing we did on the fellow who said the greatest proof of life on Mars.
Yes.
And the greatest proof of life on Mars that he was presenting was the fact that we couldn't prove there wasn't any.
Exactly.
So, in other words, you're asking me to prove a universal negative? That's the kind of tactic that groups like the Police Foundation use. And unless you're trained on how to think about that, you might go, because it's...
that sounds good.
Yeah, it's couched in terms that look very attractive. But it's got logical fallacy built in. And believe me, folks, you can learn how to do this. One of the reasons we teach, and one of the things we teach during Institute on the Constitution, is how to think critically. Because there is so much stuff out there. I actually saw something today in which Christians were encouraged not to get involved in debates in front of new Christians, because these were difficult topics and someone might be turned off by the fact that you were debating these difficult topics. Folks, you have to debate difficult topics. They have to be talked about, and you have to do it in a way that is attempting to get at truth. And in fact, these guys are doing this to cover up the truth, to hide the truth, to get away from truth.
I don't mind being considered a curmudgeon.
No.
Okay? I embrace that. And so should you. And I know you do, Chuck.
Yes, sir.
But ladies and gentlemen, you should embrace it. We need to be curmudgeons when somebody's trying to effectively lie to us by sugarcoating things or by spinning it in such a way that it's not really true, but it sounds true. What was the old phrase that was associated with Hitler? And I think it was Joseph Goebbels who said it, that if you tell a lie long enough and loud enough, it then takes on the ring of truth.
Yes.
Not that it was true, mind you, but that it resonates as if it were true. That's the reason why we have to be curmudgeonly about it. Now, we can do that in a loving and winsome way.
Yes.
But we should do it in a firm way as well, because love without truth is compromise.
Well, I can think of a number of debates. One of the things that comes to mind is the way this is done. Think about when you were in school, what did you hear about the Great Depression and Franklin Roosevelt?
Oh, he saved us.
He saved us.
He saved us from
When you look at the statistics and the things that he did.
He made it worse.
He made it much worse. In fact, he made the Great Depression, parts of it, last until 1953.
He extended for decades instead of being over with in about 2 years, which if you left it alone would probably have been where it would have landed.
This is how it's done. You repeat it over and over and over and over and over and over, and you crowd out anybody else.
There's another tactic that goes along with that, Chuck. You put a quote from somebody who's supposedly an expert that has a string of letters behind their name or doctor, reverend, or something in front of their name, and trot them out there like, if they say it, then it must be right. Now, I call that the myth of the professional, where people believe something simply because of who the messenger is who's saying it.
Exactly, the myth of the professional. And guess what? When we look at this board of directors for the police foundation,
yes,
here they are. Here are the quote-unquote experts who have yet to be correct.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is what we're dealing with. This is the fight we're fighting. And in fact, if you tune in the news, if you listen to the radio, if you read the newspaper, although how many people are reading the newspaper anymore?
I refuse to. At least the local newspaper, the Dispatch.
Basically, they're making it harder and harder and harder to read. And I think they're probably going to stop publishing every day here fairly quickly. They're doing a revamp. But that being said, you can't read this stuff. There is no room in the editorial section for people with our viewpoint. We're too quote-unquote extreme.
Well, and I embrace that too.
Yeah, I embrace that as well. And the fact is that it's not our view that's extreme. All we're doing is saying, let's stick to the things that we know work.
Exactly.
It's the other side that's extreme. And what they're doing is squeezing out anyone who's in the true center. Now, what is the true center? Is there a true center? You know, this left-right thing, this dichotomy. Well, I don't buy into that. That's really Enlightenment stuff. It all comes out of the French Revolution.
Yes, it does.
And I watch some things from BBC specials on YouTube and that kind of thing, and they're always talking about right-wing politics. And I go, if you look at who they're calling right-wing, they're exactly the same as the guys on the left wing. The only difference is that
it's the difference between drawing a line and drawing a circle, Chuck.
Exactly.
You see, because politics isn't a linear thing where you have the left side and the right side, and they're totally diametrically opposed. What you have is this huge circle because it's a continuum.
Yeah.
And what happens is the farther right and the farther left you go, you come together. There is a point. It's called anarchy.
Yeah.
On the one point on that circle is anarchy. On the polar opposite is what you would call your total centrists, who are neither right nor left, and they just want to stay in the mushy middle and never go anywhere. But they'll swing whichever way has authority or influence at the time.
Yeah. The way I learned the political scale was entirely different, and I remember using it in civics class, and my teacher, who was a progressive, hated it. And here
well,
it was.
Must be good.
You had 0% government on the left side of the scale and 100% on the right side. And guess what that does? That puts all the totalitarians, doesn't matter what their label is.
Left, right, whatever.
They're all on the far right of the scale at 100% government. In other words, Nazis, communists, Islamic jihadists, all these guys who want to have the government in charge of anything. And that would be many of today's political leaders of both parties.
Yes, it would.
Of Republicans and Democrats. And I said, my position is somewhere in the 25 to 30% range. Maybe 20 to 30%, somewhere in that. I'm acknowledging that we have to have some government.
See, now, you must have gone to the same school Bob McEwen has gone to, because former Congressman McEwen, I've sat in on a couple of his lectures where he's used that 0 to 100% scale.
I can tell you where that came from. That's an old. I learned that scale from someone who was completely rejecting this right-left dichotomy. Can't remember who it was now, but I read it in a book.
Okay.
And it made complete sense to me.
Okay.
Because this left-right dichotomy, if you look at that, the way it's set up, Nazis on the right, communists on the left. Who's in the middle?
Everybody else.
Democratic socialists.
Ah, well, yes. If you're going to use
the only
two,
that's the
two balances the
exactly.
scale. Yeah, you're right.
The fulcrum sits on the democratic socialists, and those are the people who we should be listening to. That's the obvious falsehood of that scale, because the democratic socialists are to the far right on the 0 to 100 scale.
Yes, they are.
So someday we need to lay that out. Now, guess what, Barry? I'm looking at our time.
And I'm assuming we're just about out of it.
We are out of it.
Okay. Well, we'll get to... We want to talk about some of the pro-life issues coming out of the 40th anniversary observance of Roe versus Wade. So come back with us on Monday, because we're going to start there.
Join us again on Monday for another Principles and Policies.